right, folks, welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. We have the unhappy task of dissecting the defense from the Ravens season finale against the Steelers, that 26-24, very frustrating loss. Joining me to do that is Jacob Abispitan. Please pronounce your name for us so we have it correct. I know I'm probably butchering it.
No, it's all good. It's nothing new for me. Abispitan. I always tell people, just like, think Aladdin.
Okay. All right. Well, fair enough. I appreciate you being here, Jacob, and obviously not the ideal spot anybody wants to be, but the Ravens lose this game, lost to a lot of small ball in that second half, frankly. They got chipped away, turnover-free play from Rodgers and a very high efficiency. Frankly, it must have felt this way to be a Packers fan against Huntley last week.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, the probably the biggest thing is obviously they didn't get any – you know, turnovers on the stat sheet, but what a waste of having multiple early stops preventing touchdowns and even having like the fourth down stop, but it just not because of the fourth quarter.
Yeah. Certainly tough fourth quarter. I mean, one of the things that we'll talk about at some point in this episode was, you know, what strategies did the Ravens really have to keep the defense off the field? Cause we're back to early season Ravens that their offense is tremendously explosive. They scored at will from various points on the field, particularly in that fourth quarter, but the defense was just worn to hell in that at the end of that game. They'd played so many consecutive snaps. And one of the things that's not even talked about is Travis Jones played all but two snaps the entire second half. In fact, it might have been from the beginning of the drive and that ended the second quarter, but he played only two snaps. He only missed two snaps the entire second half. You just can't play that much at a rotational position like this, particularly at a, you know, against a team that's really trying to grind you out like the way they did.
Yeah, no, I think you listed 64 snaps for a big guy is just absolutely crazy, especially when you're out there the entire time. And unfortunately, it's a double-edged sword when you have that explosiveness, you know, and you're putting the defense back out there. You know, it's not an excuse, but at the end of the day, like, yeah, you're tired.
Yeah, it's like a tax on your offensive efficiency, the fact that you have to get your defense back on the field and with, you know, probably the prospect of additional points. The Ravens needed a strategy at the end of that game to get their defense off the field, and they passed up the big one, or a big one, I'll call it that. And unfortunately, it was a repeat of something that happened 9 years ago. I'm not going to rehash every bit of that on the pod, but I will mention it just now. I've got a pod and an after game thing where I really talk about the similarities between the Juszczyk going down at the 1 yard line in the 2016 Christmas night game and that eliminated the Ravens, and then the what happened exactly last night that eliminated the Ravens in terms of Flowers passing up that sort of an opportunity. Now, Flowers himself is not the one that has to be responsible for that, but I will tell you, some on-field acumen in that regard would go a long way. And Flowers has been at the nexus of some really bad game management decisions. And I'm not saying they're all his fault, but this three times in 3 years now, he's put a ding on the Ravens' win probability in a game that's been pretty significant, including losing that Colts game in 2023, his rookie year in week three, with a fair catch on a free kick. You remember that play in week three with 2:03 left to go, and they punted it away on the free kick, and they Flowers had a fair catch, and Harbaugh thought the signal had gone in properly for him. He had been definitely signaling to him. You could see it from where he's sitting, but he signaled to him that he wanted to him to catch the ball. And then he kind of fell on the sword for Flowers after the fact and said, oh, well, you know, the ideal thing to do there would have been to call timeout ourselves, tell him what to do, because he's only a rookie and whatnot. Well, now, there've been two more incidents that have come up of this type. Where are you in terms of what the Ravens should expect or require from their own players in terms of on-field game management understanding?
I mean, that's a high level ask, I think, you know, in the sense that, you know, a lot of guys aren't going to be thinking about that stuff in the moment. I don't think it's necessarily crazy to expect someone to have like that foresight to like, okay, we know where you are right now. I mean, as an offensive player, like I'm an offensive guy, like it's okay. Like I'm a big believer when you're on offense, you control the tempo of the game. Like it's your job to control that tempo. So Yeah, I mean, I see the argument for it. I saw a lot of like the discussion around it, and I see both sides of it. I mean, I was I told you before, I was a lineman, so I didn't have to worry about any of that stuff. But yeah, it's definitely a tall ask, but that's kind of the difference between, you know, championship football in a lot of ways, is those little tiny decisions.
Alec Poulianos made the point on a pod we did about it, and that's what I'll point you to listen to this, is that Trayvon Henderson, a rookie, looked to the sideline to see if he should score on a play. And I did not see it, but that would have been an ideal thing under those circumstances, probably for Zay to do. He was way in the clear, by the way. You know, 10 yards, probably in the clear of any other defender, certainly when he caught the ball. No one was going to catch him, and he certainly had the option to put the ball down there. And you know, we don't need to talk about it anymore. If you want to learn more about that, then go to either of those other two podcasts. I did a short video on it immediately after the game, a reactions video, and then a longer pod on it a little bit later that night with Alec Poulianos. And it's out there on filmstudybaltimore.com if you want to take a listen. Ravens lost snap count 73-48 in this game. Obviously, that was an enormous part of the difficulty in playing defense, to be out there so many consecutive snaps. They were actually winning snap count pretty handily early in the game until that last drive of the first half when they had the ball forever. Then the first drive of the second half, they had the ball a long time. And then they really dominated snap count in the second half, even when the Ravens were coming back in that fourth quarter.
Yeah, I mean, I just pretty much alluded to it. Like, I'm a big believer in you control tempo in the offense. And I do think the defense does have a little bit of consideration, you know, that when you're out there that long. But, I mean, part of it's on them. You know, they got to get off the field. They got to make some plays. It does surprise me, like, coming into week 17, I guess technically week 18, that, you know, they were slightly above average on third down percentages and also red zone scoring as far as, like, touchdowns. So it's weird that the efficiency is there, but then you just remember the year, just so many long drives that they gave up, just dinking and dunking against them and such. So like I said, it does factor in that the offense was very explosive. We didn't really have the ball control most of the year that we did this year. But, you know, I was talking to someone about it, and it was like 20, it was when the Steelers had 20 points, and it was that last drive. I get you're tired, but, you know, it's just one drive you got to make a stop on, you know, and kind of go from there. Like, you're tired, but
I think that's the bigger ask. And I think that the Ravens, the central question the Ravens needed to answer from the sideline, from the booth, from the analytics guys, or from the players on the field, any one of those four, would have been, how the hell do we keep our defense off from going out there again? How do we do this? Now, it could have been third and one, you call a run instead of a pass, and that doesn't end up being a 64-yard touchdown to Zay. I'm not really in favor of that. I'm not really in favor of taking, you know, elements of the playbook away from Jackson when he's, you know, throwing the ball, slinging the ball away around the way he was last night in that fourth quarter. But I'm perfectly fine taking away 6 points off Zay Flowers' permanent ledger to have him kneel down at the 1 yard line and play it from there. So I a lot of people, they talk out of both sides of their mouth because they want Derrick Henry running more. And, you know, if you want Derrick Henry running more, the only plays that were there to be replaced were basically the long touchdown plays. Okay, there's very little else that they could have run Henry more in that second half. They already ran him. They had 15 plays before the final drive. The final 55 seconds, no one's claiming Henry should have been running then, I hope. But they had 15 plays before that in the whole second half. All right. And of those 15 plays, he ran at 5 of them. And, you know, there were others where there were third and longs and others that were just not realistic chances for him to be the target on, or to be carrying the ball. But you could have replaced a touchdown pass on third and one or on third and four with a Henry run potentially. And if you did that, you know, who knows where the game ends up and whether or not the Ravens are still in it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely giggling a little bit inside just because, like, this goes back to the beginning of the year, where I think I actually had a discussion with more than a few folks where you're talking about the points scoring versus ball control. And I think the common sentiment from what I got was people want points, you know, and I get it. Like, you score points to win the game. And Monken, I think, is very much in that mindset, you know, especially when Jackson's in. But I'm, again, it's probably due to my background, but I'm a big believer in, you know, grinding as much as possible offensively. But again, you know, at the end of the day, we're here to talk about the defense, and like, it's the offense does at times put them in a bad spot. But again, when it comes down to that last drive, that, you know, that fourth quarter stop, you know, the onus is on the defense to make a stop.
Okay. So one of the things about all game management discussions, and this is the last thing I'm going to say on the topic, all game management discussions, is that most times expected points models only work off the current drive and not worrying about what the next team is going to do with their drive. And the reason is because you have an unknown number of drives, and it's a continuum. As you get towards to the end of a half of football, you have a dual responsibility to score points and deny the other team points. And most expected points models do not contain any kind of, it's too complicated to figure out how your drive is impacting the other team's expected points. And so they, generally speaking, do not do that properly. And that's, it's one of the reasons I absolutely hate expected points models, by the way. Absolutely hate them. They don't, I mean, we play the game for expected wins. That's what the game is played for. So if you want to play for points, you know, then you're going to hate every rushing decision generally that's made in the second half if you want to play for expected points. So that's where I have a big problem with this. And you know, it's you've always got to be thinking offense and defense regardless of, you got to be thinking offense and defense when you have the ball on offense. Let's put it that way. You may only be able to think defense when you have the ball on defense. You just still some different things with timeouts and whatnot.
Really the last thing I'll even say about it is, like, I just, again, going back to that discussion, it made me laugh about it, was, is that, you know, so they were saying, like, you know, expected points and getting points on the board and stuff like that. And I was like, you know, because I was talking about how we do use a lot of deep crosses, things like that. And I was like, you don't see a lot of, like, nice little 5-yard out. And they're like, well, how does a 5-yard out, you know, get a touchdown? I'm like, well, it keeps the drive going.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the 2019 Ravens, the way they ran that offense, and frankly, the Greg Roman offense in general, people hated it, but it was an investment in the defense. They won snap count, and it was an investment in the defense to do so. All right, let's go. Let's move on here. The weariness from the defensive line, and they used 1.81 actually defensive linemen per play when they only had 4 active for the game. That really bled over into that outside linebacker position. And the reason being, fairly obviously, I know you know this, Jacob, is that they had to put in a third outside linebacker on a lot of dime packages, 29 of them to be exact in this game, as a kicked inside player. They also played a fair amount of 3 defensive linemen and 5 snaps with all 4 defensive linemen on the field. So they're a very heavily taxed group. And it's not just them. It's also the guys at outside linebacker behind them. And they did have 5 outside linebackers active, but David Ajabo was one of them. He only played 2 snaps. So they didn't really have any stomach for him being in there on defense.
Yeah, it's just looking through the numbers that, you know, that you provide, it comes down to ultimately the number of snaps overall that really plays into that. And again, not having the ball for long enough, not getting off the field quick enough, stuff like that. But yeah, I can't imagine being stuck on the field that long and in the end of the game having the wherewithal to make the stop that, again, you need to make. But yeah, it's just the last few weeks, I know part of it's injuries, part of it's personnel, but the guys have really just gone through a gauntlet. I mean, we have a lot of big linemen that have just been out there a ton the last 3 weeks. And it adds up over time.
Very heavy reliance on Jones and Jenkins in particular. They got something out of Urban in this game. They got less out of Okoye last week when they didn't play much in the way of offensive line. They had 4, and that's really all they needed against the Packers in terms of how they were running. They won snap count pretty handily. They did win snap count against, but yes, they won snap count very handily against the Packers. They rolled up 30 first downs in the game. That made it a lot easier to play defense in that game too, even though they didn't play all that well. defensively. It was a it made it easier for them to play defense in that game, and they didn't need a lot of Urban or Okoye snaps. This game, they needed a substantial number of those from Urban in particular, and they need a lot from Jenkins and a ton from Jones, who played his career high with 64 snaps. It tied tied the New England game, and it was one ahead of the Buffalo game in terms of being the most snaps he'd ever played.
Yeah, Jenkins being out there for 40 plays is a lot for an old guy.
That's a ton. Yeah. And he's you know, Jenkins does not play all of those in a row, because Jenkins plays largely first and second down. Jones plays them all in a row. I mean, that's the problem, is the total snap count is only part of the story. It's the you're playing 12 consecutive snaps at some points. You're playing eight consecutive snaps if you're a defensive lineman. I mean, what do you have left as a pass rusher at that point? You hear from anybody who's rushed the passer ever, it's about the most tiring thing you can ever do. And you have to do it for 6 or 8 or 10 straight snaps on a drive where you have to have a stop. I mean, it's not really feasible.
It doesn't feel like the kind of big thing. I know we're going to get into briefly, just some of the packages and stuff like that and rushes. It doesn't seem like we also had a lot of help with that, though. Like, there wasn't a lot of creativity in a lot of ways to make it easier to do those rushes, it felt like. And I feel like that's kind of been a thing all year also. So not only are you tired, but I'm fine with you being asked to like rush, like that's your job. Like, I like that. I like the linemen who are, you know, interior and edge to do that. I like that as their responsibility, but making a little creativity that they're not having to fight every single rush, you know, would help a lot.
Yeah, that's very difficult to do against a quarterback like Rodgers in particular, because he schemes up so well. First of all, the ball's out quickly, so your stunts are pretty much out the window. They just develop too slowly for that to be done. If you blitz him, he'll know where it's coming from, and he'll hit the hot read. You know, he's too good at those things, and you can't really make him pay for pressure more than an incomplete pass. Which, you know, he had some of those in this game where was forced to throw the ball away under pressure. But the penalty is never, it doesn't ever seem to be a turnover or a really bad fumble of, you know, anything like that. It seems to be just he throws the ball away. And that was part of the problem, is they just didn't generate really. How many decent chances do they have a turnover in this game? Maybe one, really.
The Starks,
exactly what I'm thinking of. Yeah. On the deep left. And I'm trying to think of any other time when they were even close. They had some PDs, but they were reach across the body PDs where they're, you know, not cut in front of the receiver. Wiggins down the right sideline. That ball hit him in the face mask. It could have been intercepted. It wouldn't have been a big play, because it was actually, would have been better than the punt that came right immediately after it.
I mean, with that real quick, I mean, you know, you got to give credit to Rodgers for an amazing throw to Thielen. But, you know, I mean, do you think if Humphrey gets his head around, if that's an opportunity?
It's interesting on that. That was like a directly down the numbers run, and it was one where Thielen put Humphrey in the position where he couldn't really turn for the football. Humphrey's trying to pattern match there and stay in phase, and I think in that case it was too much to ask for Humphrey to get his head around, probably. Now, you know, one of the things is Humphrey didn't have his friend the boundary to help him there. Mm-hmm. If Jimmy Smith or whoever, they, you know, if they have their friend the boundary there, they'll take a few more liberties. If you're Brandon Stevens, you have the boundary there and it doesn't really help you because you can't get your head around anyway. it's a legitimate point. Did you think that was it's a ball that Humphrey should have had his head around on?
So, I mean, that's I've been hard on him all year. I think he's had a rough year overall, but with that kind of play, yes and no. I mean, Thielen's like one of the only guys I got out there that's, you know, a name, and it was a really great pass, but the trajectory of itself, the reason I asked is because it would have been an amazing play. I do feel like opportunity is there, but if you're talking like an average, like, you know, play by play, no, I mean, I don't expect him to turn around and get that. But is there an opportunity? I think so, yes. You know, and that just kind of, he's a veteran, you know, and he's been in the league long enough. I think he knows Rodgers well enough. And it was tight enough coverage for there to be a possibility. It's a big ask, but, you know, he's an AP1 last year. He's getting paid decently. I would like to see him make that kind of play, at least to break it up. But all things considered, objectively, it was an amazing pass. It was a great route overall. So I'm not going to fault him for it, but yeah, I would like to see maybe a play made there because it was so tight.
There's no defense for the perfect pass typically, but I agree on that. That was not a drop in the bucket throw. That was more of a lower trajectory, you know, laser ball that perhaps it would have been a ball that he could have gotten his hand on. I don't think he was going to pick it. I think he could have gotten his hand on it maybe. Anyway, understand. Let's move on. Very tough game for the entire secondary after you bring up Humphrey there. The result that they actually provided, given the opportunity set, which we're going to get into a little bit later, was not that great. Rodgers actually was good, rather. Rodgers was below his expectations. So last week, they got torched by Malik Willis for about 4 yards per pass, more than expectation for the opportunity set. This game is very slightly under his expected yards for the opportunity set he was given. So we'll get into that a little bit. But the ball was out quick constantly in this game, and he threw for almost exactly what the ball out quick expectation is, which is 6.0 yards per play. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that he's very slightly below that. Now, of course, that doesn't get into the turnovers, and the turnovers were the big difference that made this game extremely efficient for the Steelers as well as the converted third downs.
Yeah, and again, I mean, I'm definitely not, you know, a guru when it comes to defense. I don't know what I know as much about the offense, but, you know, I in this kind of game where the season's on the line, you don't have the star power on the edge, you know he's going to get it out quickly. I definitely, and again, this may be, in this case, this may be my ignorance, I would have liked to see a little more locking up on the outside and just let him, I said, either get beat or not. You know, at the end of the day, let's just try to get as much pressure as we possibly can. He's going to get out quickly, let the guys man up and try to make some plays. And it, because it kind of felt like to me that the secondary didn't play poorly overall. Like they said, they definitely had moments, but it also didn't really feel like they were given the keys to like play for themselves. And, you know, and I get it, like in the middle of the season, you know, you have tons of games left, but I'm a big believer that just go out there and if it's the game's on the line, the season's on the line, just go play ball and kind of see if you can, you know, just outmatch the other opponent.
I'd agree with that. And fundamentally, I think it's probably a pretty good idea. Rodgers did beat him on throws that would have made sense had they really pressed up with man in the last game. He threw a lot of balls right in the bucket. There were timing throws. And even if you bring some kind of a special, you know, cover zero look or whatever, and you line up man right on the line of scrimmage across the thing, I mean, Rodgers will find a way to beat that, unfortunately. He won't necessarily do it as regularly, but when he does, it's going to be for some very big plays. So we saw the very first play of the game in the last one, Metcalf, you know, had the 52-yard play mm-hmm. down the left sideline. And, you know, there was pressure on the play, but it was a ball dropped right in the bucket, and there's very little that could be done about it from a defensive standpoint there. All right, we can't go 22 minutes into this episode and not talk about the fact that Kyle Hamilton's loss was basically the biggest inflection point of the night for this defense. They had a ton of missed tackles. Most of those were after Hamilton left the game, though Hamilton contributed one himself before he left. But the Hamilton, when they had him, 3.9 yards per play allowed. When they didn't have him, 6.9 yards per play allowed. So they had completely shut down the Steelers before he was lost. And you could tell it was a very big moment, a very scary moment, period, but a very big moment there. Collinsworth was right on top of it in terms of understanding what a serious point that was for the Ravens.
Yeah, and I think it's something, you know, if we have the time right now to dive into, or, you know, maybe later, it's just, I think we actually saw the same thing with the pass rush this year. For better or worse, it does seem surprising to me that the defense runs through particular players to such an extreme. I mean, we had a top sack number last year with Matt, Madubuike in. And it's kind of crazy to see so many other pieces still be there and have such an issue from one year to the next. And it feels like the pass rush was so dependent on him. And then the same thing in the back end with Hamilton. And like, obviously you have like the Browns who run through Garrett in a lot of ways, but it feels like when you have like a Sauce Gardner or someone, you kind of leave them out there to do their own thing. So you don't have to worry about that player on
Right.
offense. You use them to take away their weapon. The defense isn't dependent on them. It just feels like we have this weird dependency on certain players being able to be duplicitous, where it's just kind of strange, for it to be that big of a factor for one guy. Like, again, it's
Okay.
not Garrett rushing,
Well, the superpower of Kyle Hamilton is that he takes away the strong side of the football field to a large degree. So if you're in a typical 3-by-1 set for an NFL team, that strong side of the football field has three of your weapons. Kyle Hamilton can affect any of them. And in particular, if you're trying any of the stuff that Rodgers basically did all night, which was short little swing passes to the running backs who, gouged the Ravens for a lot of that receiving yardage total that they gave up. It wasn't most. I mean, they had a 26-yard pass to Austin on the slip. They had a pass or two to Freiermuth in the game that were hurtful. They had the long pass to Thielen that you talked about earlier. But most of that offensive damage was done by those running backs, and a lot of it was after the catch, and a lot of it was after missed tackles. And so if you have Hamilton in there on the strong side of the football field, those things are going to get significantly reduced because he's going to go and make plays. You're going to have fewer missed tackles as well, and I think it's pretty easy to see how against a player like Rodgers, against a quarterback like Rodgers, he'd have an enormous impact. But I agree with you on the Sauce Gardner comment, by the way. Basically, Gardner or Darrelle Revis, being back there typically just meant you're playing 9-on-10 football offensively. If you have a typical pocket quarterback, first of all, you're down to four eligible receivers. That's your first consideration when you've got Revis Island or Sauce Gardner or whatever. And then you've got less space to work with too, but you've got 9-on-10 offense most of the time. With Lamar Jackson, that's not true. You're playing 10-on-10 offense, and so an opposing superstar defensive back shouldn't really hurt the Ravens in the same, or a corner should not hurt them. But boy, Hamilton is just a different animal entirely in terms of his field roaming and strong side roaming capabilities.
Yeah, like I said, he's such an impact. I think the overall the biggest thing really just was disappointing is I had a chance to go to the Steelers game at home, and it felt like everything that hurt us that game they leaned into even more in this game, and without DK in this case, and it was hard to watch like pretty much the same mistakes it almost felt like.
It was frustrating to be sure. I've kind of forgotten how bad snap count turned out in this game, that game, or what it was. It was a lot of big plays in that game that burned the Ravens, is my recollection. Like plays of 28 and greater yards, they had a bunch of those.
I mean, they had, I think, two scores that were essentially off of dunks, or a little, dink. Like they had the one, I can't remember the running back name, but he had like a 35-yard, like
Warren.
little, yeah, Warren, just little pitch out to him, and just no one was there. So like I say, it felt like a lot of the same was used, and it just didn't seem like I had an answer for it overall.
All right. Did a pretty good job of stopping the Pittsburgh run game. At least it wasn't special in this game. And that's, I think, when they have only four defensive linemen, I want to at least make sure that it doesn't get special. But the running backs, they ran 19 times for 76 yards, so 4.0 yards per play. And they had two of the biggest plays of the game. The Ravens put in their jumbo package with all four defensive linemen they had active. So, by the way, what happens if one of those gets hurt and you need a jumbo package? Enough said. Enough said. That's a rhetorical question. Yeah. But they had the fourth and one stop where they got off the field, and they had the first and one goal line snap that ended the half. And both those times they stopped it with the jumbo package. So those were two of their most successful plays. And then from the they had in the second half, it almost looked like they were running with Derrick Henry against the Ravens, even though the Steelers only dressed two running backs for the game. And they used those two running backs for five kickoff returns. They're both the two guys back, and for all the offensive snaps. And they had several snaps where they had both of them on the field. Okay. So Gainwell and Warren, I mean, they didn't even activate a third running back, and they were able to break tackles at the rate they did. Nobody got tired. Nobody got hurt. You know, what the hell's going on here? It shouldn't be. I mean, that is really like trying to, you know, deal with Derrick Henry in the second half of some games.
Yeah, I mean, Warren, I mean, I like Warren at the end of the day. I think, I don't know if I would say he's underappreciated, because he does get a lot of recognition in a lot of ways, but he's just one of those guys. He reminds me a lot of Maurice Jones-Drew in a lot of ways, just like with his size and everything.
Of gravity.
Yeah. So, I mean, as far as the being tired or not, I mean, they definitely dogged it out at the end of the day. They were utilized a lot, you know, and it just, you know, it showed.
Yeah, it showed. And, you know, the secondary was not able to make tackles, and the linebackers a lot of times are not able to get to the play. Roquan had a lot of I think Roquan was very tired by the end of the game. He was having a climbing guard hit him a lot in this game. He was getting blocked by tight ends some too when they got to the edge. But he just had trouble getting to the play for a lot of this one. Not one of his best games of the season for certain. He's really had an outstanding year, but you kind of want to hit a hamstring that showed up on the injury report early in the week, and I kind of wonder if that was maybe part of the problem still.
They've just been quiet. Unfortunately, like I said, great, really quiet, good year overall, but it wasn't impactful. It felt like this year, I think, was the biggest difference. I don't want to go as far as saying, like I said, he had a bad year by any means, but I just don't recall, outside of a couple of plays, it didn't seem like his normal impact.
Most ways that PFF has graded him, he ranks very high. He ranks very, very well in terms of missed tackle rate. He's had another good, not missing tackles here, but he had at least one miss in this game. Might have had two. The other thing he's done at a much higher level than typically has been in coverage. He's been much better. He's had deeper drops. He's been good at that. He's been asked to cover a tremendous amount because the other guys the Ravens have out there, they just don't trust him with the drop. Whether it's Buchanan or Simpson, they don't really trust either of them. With that role. So it means that he can't rush the passer as much as he has in the past, and it means he has to do more coverage. But I thought he's been very good at dragging the seam this year. He's looked good in that. And he's always been a great downhill player. Just this game is a game where I did not feel like the linebackers were reactive enough to the extension of the run game that the Steelers were getting out of these short little passes to the running backs. All right, let's talk packages a little bit. We'll move on to that. I want to just go through these quickly to give you an idea of how heavy the Ravens played in this game. They played five snaps of jumbo, allowed 2 yards on those five plays. So if I lay those results out, they had a zero that was a fourth and one stop. They had a minus one that was a goal line stop at the end of the half. And then they had 3 1-yard plays in the second half, which doesn't seem bad, except that one of them occurred on fourth and one, and then one of them occurred on first and goal from the one on the very next play. So those were actually both losses. And then they had another 1 yard stop that was at kind of the beginning of a drive late. It was on first down late. So, the jumbo, they're using four defensive linemen per play. Getting back to my four defensive linemen is never enough harping here. They used the base 13 times. They used three defensive linemen 0 times against the Packers. 0 snaps. They played a base or jumbo the entire game. Pretty incredible. You've played some offensive line in your days. How many times have you seen the opposing team never line?
Let me tell you about the online cannabis company that's changing the game, Mood.com. They created an entirely line of functional gummies, 100% federally legal THC blends, discreetly delivered right to your doorstep. And here's the best part. You can get 20% off your first order at mood.com with the promo code Ravens. Now, I've tried a bunch of their gummies myself. Each one's totally unique. The Sleepy Time gummies knock me out right away. They help me unwind fast, leave me refreshed the next morning. The Epic Euphoria gummies, they're perfect for when your day just isn't going the way you want it to go. What makes Mood special is how they pair the THC with natural herbs and adaptogens. You won't find blends like this at any local shop. They've got gummies designed for focus, relaxation, clarity, even energy, all made from cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. No pesticides, no shortcuts, just high-quality weed you can trust. Plus, Mood backs everything with a 100-day satisfaction guarantee. So head on over to mood.com, check out their amazing selection, and don't forget to use the promo code RAVENS at checkout to save 20% off your first order.
Every day, companies you've never heard of are making millions off your personal data. Your name, address, phone number, even details about your family are pulled from public records on the internet, then sold without your consent. There's an entire marketplace built on your privacy, and most people have no idea it exists. Aura fights back. Aura removes your personal data from broker sites and keeps it off. Aura also alerts you fast if your information shows up in a breach or on the dark web. But Aura is more than just a data broker removal system. It's a full digital security suite that protects every part of your online life. Aura gives you a VPN to stay private, antivirus to block threats, a password manager for safer logins, and spam call protection to shut down scammers. Aura scans the dark web for your most sensitive information and notifies you instantly if anything is exposed. And if your identity is ever stolen, you're backed by up to $5 billion in insurance and 24/7 U.S.-based fraud support. Other service charges about the same, but only cover one or two areas. Aura gives you everything. Data broker removal, identity and credit monitoring, device protection, and fraud support all in one simple app. Aura removes what's already exposed, protects what's not, and puts you back in control. Go to aura.com/remove for complete digital protection and peace of mind. That's aura.com/remove.
Top with three defensive linemen on the field.
As popular as, you know, 3-4 these days are still, and obviously extensions of it. I mean, it's typically the go-to because you want to have that big, heavy nose tackle to disrupt the interior and then, the playmakers at the three tech. But yeah, I won't say it's very often. You don't see at least a couple guys out there.
Yeah. Well, we'll get to the rest of this. The standard nickel. Now, the standard nickel is what they had to revert to after Hamilton was lost. So the standard nickel was Humphrey out there at slot corner. And after Hamilton's departure, that package allowed 6.4 yards per play, which is more than the Steelers had overall. And the big nickel, which they used for the 11 snaps that they still had Hamilton to play nickel, 2.9 yards per play. So they're very effective. That basically the heavier they were, the more effective they were in terms of not giving up yards per play in this game.
Now, where is Humphrey normally located with the big
boundary.
Nickel?
Boundary. Oh, in boundary. Yeah. That's the only position that would be available to him. Although next year, maybe it's safety. I've been lobbying for that pretty hard. I'm gonna lighten up on it at some point, but I think it's probably time. If he moved to safety and he's gonna have to be a good tackler to do that. We didn't see really good tackling from him in this game, but if he moves there, he has a lot of portable skills for the position. A lot of reading the quarterback skills, a lot of off man ball skills, meaning of his cornerback interceptions that he had this year, and he just had the 3-game interception streak broken. He was getting interceptions on somebody else's assignment, which is that your corners who can do that. That's your eyes or ears should perk up and try and figure out if that guy's ready at some point to move to safety. And I think he'd be a very talented safety. Let's put it that way. I think he'd be a very instinctive, and he certainly still has more than enough speed for the safety position. And he has really questionable speed remaining with the injuries for the corner position. All right. So anyway, move on a little bit. They played some rush nickel in this game. That's three snaps. Now, what's a rush nickel? That's when they have three outside linebackers on the field, one down lineman, and a nickel otherwise with two inside linebackers. So you did that three times. They did get one of their sacks on that. I think it was a Jones 4-yard sack was that. They played 29 snaps of dime in this game. So that's a pretty high preponderance of dime. The Steelers had the ball at the end of each half on drives where they needed to move up the field and try and score. And a lot of those were dime snaps. Basically, they were cheating to the dime, meaning they go to the dime early in what would otherwise typically be run situations or possible run situations for teams. But they cheated to it whenever basically the Steelers put him in position to do it by taking off that sixth offensive lineman. So when they did that and it was second and six, I think on one occasion, they went to the dime even then to try and basically see if they could control the passing game and do a better job versus those running backs. But a lot of that, I think, is really trying to get Simpson off the field more than they think it's going to be a great player they're adding. And this was unfortunately not a great game for Ardarius Washington, who would have replaced him on some of those plays. Mm-hmm. All right, let's keep going. Two snaps a quarter, end of the first half they played. The two snaps a quarter, I think, were both incomplete passes. They didn't give up anything, but they also, it's too small a sample size to draw any conclusion from it. It was strange with two inside linebackers, two outside linebackers, and no linemen on those plays, I believe. I'll have to check that again. It might have been two linemen and two outside linebackers. No, Roquan is on the field, so I just want to look at those two plays for a second here. Yeah, two plays. It was the first and nine on the second and nine at the end of the half. Yeah, they had no defensive linemen on the field for any of those, actually three consecutive plays there. First and nine, second and nine, and third and nine near the end of the half.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just jump in. Like, silver lining, I guess, you know, looking at that, especially with that many plays at dime. I mean, kudos to the linemen for being out there and still having some control over the run game, you know, not being in particularly big packages outside of those obviously jumbo plays. But yeah, it's just like, I think the Bills are probably most notorious for it at this point, but just that extended, you know, running game through those short passes, just especially if you're in dime, you want to hope to be able to lock that up a little bit more, you know, having a little bit more speed out there, but didn't seem to play out that way.
Yeah, if you typically, when the Ravens are in dime, the current Ravens, they would have Kyle Hamilton at the weak side linebacker spot, which is tremendous tonic to end any sort of. And if they don't, if it's big nickel, they have Kyle Hamilton at the slot corner position, which is tremendous tonic against any kind of strong side activity. So it's just missing Hamilton was absolutely enormous in this game, and it played a huge role. So. Really a big break for the Steelers there. We'll move on, take a look at the pass rush for a little bit here.
Oh yeah, should be fun.
All right, we're gonna have some fun slogging through this, I'm sure. Okay, so the first thing I do, and Jacob, you probably listened to the pod before, at least you know, is I divide the pass snaps into ATS, BOQ, and pressure. So ample time and space, a 3-second pocket, BOQ, ball out quick, before pressure can develop, and pressure, which is pressure within 3 seconds that gets the quarterback. So these are different buckets that every single pass play can be divided into. So he had 49 total times that Rodgers had a pass or was sacked in the game. 12 of those were ample time and space, so 24%. Threw for 68 yards on this play, which is 5.7 yards per play, which, it's bad that they gave up 24% is not too much ATS to give up. But beyond that, Rodgers didn't do anything with it. You know, to throw for only 5.7 yards per play, 8.5 would be the standard for that. And so he's about 34 yards below expectation. Now, one of those plays was the big overthrow early to Jonnu Smith on the left side. Remember that one?
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lot of missed yards right there. Probably was almost the whole difference right there, because I think that play probably would have gone for about 35 yards.
Yeah, I mean, with the ample time with him, I mean, I probably just lost train of thought, but it is surprising to see an amount below what's expected. You know, but we're going to get ready to get to, you know, ball out, before the pressure, which kind of explains a lot too. But again, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with DK wasn't there. You know, I mean, they didn't have that person to really stretch the field as much as normal. Obviously, like you said, there was a couple of plays that, that Thielen had gotten and Freiermuth did. Although granted, I'm not sure if those were the ones that were ATS, but I think you can really attribute a big part of that they just didn't have DK there, which is probably why a big part of why he didn't perform, you know, above expectation, which is a break for us. You know, it was a break for the defense.
Yeah, but he would have punished them. That's for sure. The 28-yard throw the 28-yard throw was the second and eight play, or was there another one? No, it's the only 28-yard play I've got is, and I think this was the one to Thielen, was on second and eight, and there was actually pressure on that play from Jones.
Yeah, the only one I'm thinking of was where Freiermuth beat, I guess you can say beat Washington okay. on the double move. Should have been like over the center.
Over the center of the field?
Yeah, it was right down I think it was between the hashes.
All right, I'll have to find that again in my notes. I don't have it right in front of me here, but I'm sure you're right about that. I do kind of remember it now. All right, but the one we talked about earlier was Thielen on Humphrey mm-hmm. down the right seam effectively, down the right number, I should say, not the right seam. And he kind of a lower trajectory ball. That ball, I think there was pressure on that play, so. Okay. All right, let's keep going here. We mentioned we're going to talk about ball out quick next. 26 ball out quick plays. That's 53%. That's just a ridiculously high percentage of balls to be out quickly. So when you have the ball out quickly, kind of you're defining out some elements. First of all, you're defining out every single sack. Because the ball's out quickly, you can't possibly be sacked. You can be sacked on an ATS play. You can get a late sack. That'll occur when the quarterback has 3 seconds, dances around, can't find anybody, decides to thinks about running it. You know, all the things that can happen with an extended play that can still end up in a sack. And in particular with Lamar Jackson, some of that occurs in the natural transactional course of Jackson business, is that you're going to take a few extra sacks in exchange for some significant scramble yards that come that accrue from that, and extended play passes that come from that. But the ball out quick, you factored all that out. So now you've got just pure passing game in there. You know, it's how'd the pitch go? How'd the catch go? 26 plays of that type, 190 yards, 7.3 yards per play. So while he's 34 yards below expectation with ample time and space, he made it all up exactly 34 yards above expectation for ball out quick.
And that's kind of where, again, You live by the sword, die by the sword type situation, where I would have liked just to see a little bit more aggressiveness on the bounds. You know, again, I'm never going, especially with coaching. I know some people, we saw it with Wink in the past, where people absolutely hated how aggressive he would be mm-hmm. in a lot of different game situations. But, and again, I might be thinking as a player, but I'd rather lose it 110% than give up, you know, concede stuff throughout the game. So when you see the ball coming out that quickly, that often, and making up such a large portion of, you know, the total yardage, I just want to see them, you know, buckle up and just see if they can do something. If you get beat, you get beat. Like I said, at least you got beat. You know, you're not conceding.
Okay, real important point to make with that. First of all, I agree with you generally. Defense needs to take risks, and they can only take risks that are appropriate to that opposing offense. Okay. So I don't think like extra pass rush assets trying to get to Rodgers was the answer, because he gets rid of the ball too quickly. It's the penalties are too small when you do somehow get to him. I don't think that's the way to go. I think what you talked about earlier, and I think this is what you mean here, is really buckling down with some press man coverage. I think that's a viable strategy against Rodgers if you want to try and take some big swings and try and make sure on third down that you give yourself the best chance. I think that's viable, but you know, Rodgers, he proved pretty much in this game that, you know, when he just was able to get the ball out quickly, didn't have to have a lot of time. In some of these cases, he was pressured and he was, we'll get to this next, but he didn't do as well, but with ball out quickly, I mean, he's just too darn effective for the Ravens to deal with him. And since that's such a high percentage of plays, a lot of the Steelers' efficiency came from that. But I agree with you. Basically, if you're talking about the Martindale defense in particular, I think you might be basically saying this is more risk is generally a good thing for the defense, that the defense has the onus in today's NFL to take risk, and they particularly have it when you're in a four down football situation, when the other team has to drive any distance, particularly if they just have to drive at a field goal range and they have four downs. Defense has to take tremendous risks to potentially get off the field in such a situation.
I'll try to summarize it very, very briefly. It's just, again, defense isn't my side. So someone out there may hear me say this and think I'm crazy, but I view it as it isn't the pressure aspect of it for me in this case. It's putting the onus on the receivers with the level of talent that they had to make plays and essentially high-lowing as much as you possibly can. Have the safeties over top, try to get the boundary guys playing tight on the receivers, and then having the linebackers, you know, or anyone in this case like Hamilton, just kind of lurking a little bit underneath. And essentially, you know, you're leaving yourself susceptible to deeper passes, but there's DK isn't there. Take that chance. So in this case, right, it's not about bringing more pressure. It's if you're going to rush four people, I understand why you don't want to commit more pressure because of how quickly he gets it out, but create a situation that you're trying to minimize the yards after a catch in those situations if it is completed, or forcing suboptimal receivers against, you know, our cornerbacks. And, you know, again, that's what I'm talking about when I'm saying let them just play and try to make a play, is let them one-on-one, maybe with a little bit of support, make the receiver make the play instead of us just trying to, you know, prevent whatever they were trying to prevent.
Right. I mean, the offense on the opposing side has a say in that. So they will force you into all one-on-one matchups that are bad for you, or that they think are bad for you, if you basically set your defense in that manner. So if you have, you know, otherwise you have to be very good about disguising your coverage and moving players around, you know, particularly at the safety position, being try to figure out what is the key route with any like lined up receiver concept, bunch formation, whatever it may, and take that away from the opposing defense. There's so much that would be required of a safety in that situation in order to take away anything but one route he chooses to do against a player like Rodgers. So, okay. So I'm not disagreeing with what you're saying at all. I mean, I really believe in trying to play man coverage. And when you look at when teams play man coverage, because by the way, every team plays a very heavy preponderance of zone coverage in the entire league. But when they do play man coverage, it's on high leverage downs where they're trying to prevent a short completion and trying to get the other team off the field. And the gamble is worth it. And that's the time when, hey, I'm all for it. And then you often have to pair that up with something like maybe additional pressure. So you're actually taking an additional risk because you want to bring somebody to a slot corner, or you want to bring a linebacker or whatever. You're actually creating an additional risk in that way. It takes risk to really get paid off. I think they just, this game, I'm not saying that they didn't take some risk, because I think they did, but they certainly got beat by Rodgers pretty effectively when the ball was out quickly. I'll just say that. All right, let's move on. We'll talk about pressure. 11 plays, 22% with pressure, only threw for 32 net yards, 2.9 yards per play with two sacks. You're only expected to throw about 3.5 yards per play when you have pressure. And the big stat to look for there is big two, or sacks and turnovers. Sacks are like a 1-point consideration, and turnover is probably about a 10-point consideration or a 5-point consideration anyway. But those are two ways you really take a chance on ending drives. So in totally underperformed his opportunity set by 7 yards in total. The other really big thing and the big difference between the Steelers offense and the Ravens offense. Okay, I'm going to ask it as a Socratic question here, because I want to know from you what you think was also the next biggest impact. There was a difference between the Steelers and Ravens offense, because I want to hear what you have to say, because not everybody picks up on this as the game is going on. And, you know, I know you're a very educated fan. I just want to hear from you
like what you thought was a difference between the two offenses.
Oh man. I'm trying to guess the right answer.
This is more like a result than a scheme. So I'll be clear about that. So it's like we've already talked about turnovers were 1-0, for example. So what was a big difference between the two in terms of efficiency of drives?
I mean, besides obviously time, time was huge. Mm-hmm. I didn't actually get a chance to look at obviously third downs.
A big difference on third downs. And the difference was the Ravens were 4 of 12, the Steelers were 9 of 16. You add they're 1 of 2 on fourth down, they're 10 of 16. The Ravens are 6 of 12. It's a difference, but it's not really the biggest difference in terms of efficiency. I've got one other thing I point to that is just tighten my colon all night about the difference between the Ravens and the Steelers on offense.
Yeah, hit me with it. I'm probably gonna be like, oh, of course, but
yeah.
What are you getting at?
So I'm getting at the penalty differences. The Ravens killed themselves with offensive penalties. So Stanley's holding penalty in the second quarter stalled a drive right away. Holding penalty on first down, put them in a first and 20 situation, and 3 plays later they had to punt because of it. The very next drive, Tyler Linderbaum had a 10-yard holding penalty that negated a 20-yard run on 3rd and 9. So that's the ultimate drive staller, as it killed off a successful third down play. Then they had a little bit later, they had a drive stalled by Tez Walker's false start that I think is probably something people have forgotten, but it was 2nd and 11. A 5-yard false start made it that much more difficult. They made it 2nd and 16, 3rd and 16, and then they had to punt. So that's 3 drives stalled by penalty there, and then they started scoring every drive. So 3 different drives in this game were stalled by penalty. Now, the Steelers, I'm not sure how many offensive penalties they had, but it wasn't many. They had 1 false start.
They had 3 all together for the entire game.
Yeah, let me go through this. So they had a false start that was on the time where they scored the first of the last 2 go-ahead touchdowns, put it that way. They had it on the middle. Then where else did they have it? They had an OPI 88. Mm-hmm, that did not stall the drive because they completed passes for 7 and 13 immediately after it. It was a bad penalty, but it didn't stall the drive. And then what else did they have? No, they had a DPI against us on Hamilton in the back of the end zone. I don't think they had any other penalties.
Yeah, I think it was 3.
If they had 3 penalties in total, maybe 1 was on defense. So are you talking about 3 on the offense?
No, I think 3 total. I feel like I remember seeing 3 total.
So they had a roughing the passer penalty, at least. I'll take a look and see if I can match that 3. But the penalties were just an enormous problem for the Ravens. They had 5 for 45 in the game. So probably they might have had 1 on special teams or something. I think they might have had a hold on a kickoff return. So, mm-hmm. Okay.
I just absolutely was. It was atrocious to see that Linderbaum penalty. Yeah. Like, it's one of those ones where, yes, by the book, like the defender was impeded. But I mean, we're talking about a play. This one stuck with me so much because Linderbaum went up to the second level. The linebacker essentially cut in underneath of him, and I can't remember who was running, who essentially was running the play, but they veered off left, and linebacker pretty much chased him, and the two of them got hooked together. I mean, Linderbaum's arm literally yep. was not hooked onto the player, but like was pretty much shoved, and so yes, there was an impediment there, but I don't do the whole all penalties losses the game or type things, but that was pretty ticky tacky in my opinion, in the sense that there was clearly not an effort on Linderbaum's part to prevent that defender from getting to where he was trying to go. I understand there was impediment in the play and you can call it based off of that impediment, but there wasn't a grab, there wasn't anything that was intentional in my opinion. So that one was it was just really unfortunate for that to happen, because it's yeah. one of those plays that's just two guys playing football and getting tied up. You know, it's one of those times, I think it was the Bucks game where someone literally fell over because their feet touched and they got like a DPI. And it's just one of those things. It's like, why, you know, why is that not a call that needs to be made? So that one was, that one did stick out with me a lot. As soon as you said it, I was like, oh yeah, that one really ruffed my feathers.
It was somewhat ticky tack. And the problem was the proximity to the play. So it's the kind of one where I can't say that was so far away from the play, it shouldn't have been called. For example, it was really close to the play. That was the unfortunate thing. And so it was and still, I think if he hadn't have done it, if he hadn't have gotten caught up is one fair way to put it. But if he hadn't had his arm where he had his arm, I think Jackson still probably would have gotten by him. But it's not a sure thing that he was still gotten a 20-yard play. Maybe he gets 6 or 8 instead, or you know, whatever it might be. He might have gotten started to be dragged down at that point by that defender or slowed down such that another defender could get there. I understand the point I think you're making. It's valid. And I did feel particularly early in this game like the game was tremendously over-officiated. The illegal blindside block against Zay Flowers, just a horrific, horrifically bad call. And I think the officials, frankly, in the NFL are lucky that drive ended up the way it did in a touchdown drive for the Ravens, even though they had to go 100 yards instead of 85 to do it, because it would just been there would have been a lot of whining about it otherwise. Wasn't it, you know, it's not at the fourth quarter. It's not at the everybody's, you know, the nexus of everybody's optics or whatever, where everybody's looking at the game to be decided. But it was a horrible call.
I mean, even with that one, I mean, they literally added the component of having to be essentially going back towards your goal line.
Yeah.
I mean, he's running in pace with the player. Yep. It's
bumped him towards the sideline, completely legal. You know, there's nothing about in the back or anything. I mean, and if it wasn't in the block, back block, which it wasn't, they called the wrong flag. You know, that is IBW. It's not IBB. You know, so
they're just mad that, you know, someone that was 110 pounds, like knocked over someone, I guess.
And if Hayward was on the ground there for a minute, that could have been a really big inflection point for the Steelers in that game too. Because he certainly wrecked the Ravens in a lot of ways in this game. All right. So good talk about that. The pass rush by numbers, I'm going to use very briefly. Orr didn't use a lot of numbers in this game, 4.16 pass rushers per play. So he used 3 5 times, 4 35 times, 5 5 times, and 6 4 times. And basically the rule of thumb in this game, and it's just obviously very small numbers involved, is the more that they rushed, the worse Rodgers' results were. And you're dealing with very small sample sizes in 3 of the 4 cases. But the 5 plays went for 38 yards, 7.6 yards per play, 35 for 221, 6.3 yards per play with 4. Then they rushed 5, it was only 5 plays for 24, 4.8, and 4 plays for 7 with 6, which is 1.7 yards per play. So somebody would look at that and say, well, look at that. All they didn't do is rush more on a per play basis. I don't think it's quite that easy. I think this, you know, the sample sizes are too small to be reliable in 3 of those 4 cases.
Yeah, I mean, you got to take in consideration. You'd probably know better than I do because obviously you're running the numbers. But, you know, how much does that play at those jumbo? Like, I'm assuming you count all the linemen in that case as coming on a jumbo package, correct? Like, or does it only count when you have extra defenders coming? So if you have 4 down linemen, then you bring in extra, that's 5. If you have 5 down linemen and all of them come, does that still count as 5 for the metric?
Okay, well, the rules on who's counted as a pass rusher, I think, is what you're trying to get
correct.
At. Is who makes an attempt to move upfield. So it's very obvious, but the basic pass rushing set. So, okay, if I'm doing this with Maureen directly, I'll just give you a little insight into our process. We sit there in front of the TV and I'll say, okay, it's a 6-man rush is shown. They bring it 5-1, for instance, we might say, or 4-2. That's a typical simulated pressure look. What that means is they had 6 guys at the line of scrimmage that were no further out. Inside of the closest slot receiver. Okay. And those guys were all at the line of scrimmage within 1.5 yards as the ball was snapped. If they're further back than 1.5 yards, they haven't declared themselves as a pass rusher. If they're at least as far as the slot corner, they haven't declared themselves as a pass rusher. And then it's who actually makes an attempt to rush. You can make an initial feint to rush and then drop. You're a dropper. If you make a rush from level two or from off the slot, you're a blitzer because you're not among the originally declared players. What else is there to talk about there? Players do drop from the middle of the line. You were talking about like defensive linemen. That happens from time to time where they'll be part of a simulated pressure where they drop, like Michael Pierce's interception last year in the final game. And we've had, you know, even Travis Jones has dropped to cover a fair number of times this year. Was there some element that I'm not capturing in what I just described about how I assign a pass rusher or not?
No, I appreciate it. You actually cleared it up. It was my, I was missing the keyword pass rusher and not, essentially not lineman proceeding past the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. And you, just to be clear, you can proceed past the line of scrimmage and still not be a pass rusher if you faint and then you drop back. The other one that you don't have a pass rusher on, then that guy still can sometimes get a sack, is when the quarterback breaks the pocket. The rule, you probably know this, but the near side zone defender from the middle needs to immediately break to the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And that's generally the rule of play that's universal on defenses. At least it's always been universal for the Ravens, I'll say that. I think it's pretty much universal for all defenses.
Most teams, I would say.
Yeah. So that guy immediately, when that happens, and it happens, you know, a fair amount, sometimes that guy will get a sack and he's not part of a 4-0 rush. Say he's just an extra free rusher that you get a for a late sack like that. All right. What else do we want to talk about here? Deceptive elements. Let's go briefly on this. We're kind of running a little bit late here. I'm going to point you to the article. Take a look if you want to know about the deceptive elements from this game. I'll just say there's very little of it done. They had a little bit of success with blitzes in particular, even though they ran only four the whole game, small sample size. But I'd say generally speaking, their deception did not work. And Rodgers was able to play well against it. And that's why they did very little of it in the game. But if you want detail, it's out there in the article. I don't want to go further than that on there. And Robinson was the biggest pressure generator in the game. He had 2.5 pressures plus a sack for no yards on that. Nice chase down on the right sideline. Completely agree, by the way, with Collinsworth analysis that Rodgers, not any previous point, but 10 years ago, that would have been a big play for Rodgers. Easy first down. All right.
Yeah.
And then Draymond Jones had 3 pressures in the game. He's the only other Raven with more than 2. So it tells you that's a pretty tough night. We've been through some games recently where Travis Jones has had, you know, 5 and 8 pressure events that he's been working with. He had the sack and 1 other pressure in the game. So that was it for him. All right, Jacob, really appreciate you making time for this. I know it's not everybody's favorite thing to do to come on after a loss at all, but certainly not to talk about the defense after a loss like this. I appreciate you coming on. If folks want to talk football with you, where can they contact you?
Yeah, always on Reddit for the most part. Handle is Spitan89, SBITAN89. Mostly there. And then definitely on any of Ken's posts, you'll probably see me chiming in.
Yeah, I've seen that. I appreciate you engaging on those. It always seems to get some feathers ruffled and get other people into the conversation, which is really cool. The Reddit community, I would highly recommend to folks. If you're not over there, it's worth having an account. The Ravens community is pretty good over there. There's certainly a lot of very knowledgeable posters, and it's probably like a lot of communities where you have some reactive posters as well. And that's not a terrible thing. They're always going to be there. And whether you're on Twitter or wherever you may be, there's going to be people who are just pissed off and they want to vent. And that's the way. I think you probably get a little bit less of that on Reddit, because I think that people are a little bit more concerned about their on-site persona and being, how would I describe it? Not a reactionary idiot for a long period of time. And there are people who don't care. Right? There are, but on Twitter, I mean, people will just make up new accounts to say stupid things. In terms of the other landscape of Twitter, it's highly politicized in a an extreme bipolar way, and I'm sure a lot of people have caught on to that as well, that I'm not very fond of. I don't want to hear either extreme, honestly. I want to talk football. So, Jacob, anyway, really appreciate having you on. Really appreciate the listeners. Thanks for listening the entire year now. This is the very last defense pod of the year, obviously. Appreciate your questions. Please use hashtag film study mailbag all off season. I'll be trying to continue to do about three of these short videos per week. So if you have questions on there, I'd love to answer them in a 1 to 3 minute video. And if not, I'll get them on the appropriate show, whether that's Friday Morning GM, one of the looks at the positions as they've been throughout the year, or another pod where they have the expectations series. Of course, we'll probably have some others that we'll do as well. But I appreciate all of you very much. And thanks for listening. Jacob, thanks again for coming on.
Appreciate you.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.